Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the Rochelle Sparrow Connection. I am so glad to be talking to everyone tonight. We have a wonderful guest. Her name is Shelley Yates, and she has a wonderful website that I'd really like you to visit, and that's www.firethegrid.com. Welcome, Shelley.
Hi there.
How are you?
I am fabulous.
Well, I am so glad that you're fabulous. And what I want to do is just sit back and let the audience enjoy your story.
I guess we have to go back and start from the beginning. In November of 2002, my four-year-old son and I hydroplaned my car into a flooded marsh, and the car sank to the bottom of this flooded marsh. And I was a trained lifeguard, a scuba diver. I felt perfectly capable to get out of this car. And long story short, I couldn't get out of the car. And I looked at my four-year-old son and I said, you know, you have to hold your breath. We're going to get out and everything's going to be fine. And it didn't take very long for me to realize that I was trapped in the car. And the water was coming up over our bodies, and it was the panic started to set in. So I took his little body and I put him in the back seat, and I was hoping, I guess, beyond a miracle, that there was water or air in the back of this car. There wasn't any air in the car. The car sank within 2 to 3 minutes to the bottom of the lake and filled up with water, and we both drowned in the car. So as I was drowning, I wasn't a religious person. I had no God. I had no faith. And I didn't even call out to God. I remember very clearly thinking that, you know, I'm going to die. And all I could think of was the fact that I wanted to get my baby's body back because I had pushed him over the seat into the back. So I'm searching the car frantically for his little body, and I couldn't find his body. And just as I had to take a breath, well, I have to back up a little bit because I did take a full breath and the water rushed into my lungs. I felt the burning go into my lungs.
As you were still searching for his body?
Right. And I had breathed in the water, and that really set me in panic. And I became more frenzied looking for him, and now I was kind of out of my cool zone, certainly, and even my life skills of swimming and stuff were out the window. I had nothing left to barter with, and I had no God. So I started to have to breathe again. Of course, the first breath gave me no air, but I knew I had to breathe. And all of a sudden, I heard this magnificent voice in my ear. It was in my right ear, and it said, relax, relax. And it was kind of commanding, and I'm the type of personality that I don't take commands very well at the best of times.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought, this is, you know, really strange, and I must be hallucinating. And then all of a sudden, this voice became very cooing and loving, and it kept saying, you need to relax. You need to give yourself over to the water. And within moments, I had what I call an infusion or a download of information about if I continued to fight the water, I was going to drown. Literally, my lungs would fill up with water, and that when they came, they wouldn't get me back. And this voice kept saying, you know, if you continue to fight the water, you're going to drown. And I remember thinking, you know, this is a wise-ass ghost. I'm dying, and it's making jokes to me. And I'm really thinking I'm delusional. But all of a sudden, I had this incredible feeling of joy and peace. And this voice had won me over. And I put my arms out in the car, and I never thought about Evan, and I never thought about anything. And I just put my arms back, and I said, give yourself over to absolute pleasure. And I died. Well, they did come, and they pulled us out of the car, and I was in the water for 15 minutes. I was submerged for 15 minutes. And after the submersion, they did 7 minutes of CPR. So when I woke up from the CPR, I bolted straight up, and I called out, get my baby out of the lake. And two more men went back into the lake, and they couldn't find his body. And the next thing I know, there's a big boom truck coming and hauling the car out, and you could see his body floating in the back window. And by now, he'd been in the lake for 30 minutes. And I could hear all these people crying and calling out because a crowd had gathered, and I kept saying, I need to get up, you know, I need to see my baby. And the next thing I know, I'm put into an ambulance. They open the door, and apparently his little body floats out with the water, and it's, you know, quite a lot of drama, and oh my gosh, because he's dead. So we end up at the hospital, and the doctors come to me and say, your son is brain dead, and all his organs have hemorrhaged, and they're really not viable, so even if he does wake up, he has no hope of ever living any kind of normal life, because he'll need colostomies and he'll need dialysis, and, you know, they listed a bunch of medical stuff. And none of this made sense because I was alive. You know, I'm here.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, I said, I need some time. So I walked out in the hallway, and all of a sudden, these things came over me like floods. It's a tingling emotion, and I was like, wow, what is this? And I heard the voice again, and the voice said, fill it up. Fill it up, fill it up. And eventually I saw images of a bucket and auras, and I saw all this energy around people. And basically over the next 3 days, I continued to see people's body aura, and I was directed how to rebuild my son's body energy or his auric field. And, of course, I didn't know what an auric field was. I didn't. You know, I grew up on a little island on the east coast of Canada. I had no exposure to this kind of thing. But I was told to listen to the instructions implicitly. And if I did, everything would be fine and that they would bring back my son. So the doctors, of course, thought this was, you know, highly unorthodox. And I said, well, what do you care? You've already said he's dead. So let me have my 3 days. And they agreed. So for 72 hours, we rotated people through his room. We charged his body the way I was told to do it. We played music. We played rock and roll, which was his favorite. So we played rock and roll during the day, and at night we would play Mozart, Healing to Mozart. And this went on for 3 days. And all of a sudden, somewhere around the 73 or 74-hour mark, he opened his eyes. And within 6 hours of that first opening of his eyes, he was off most of life support. And within another 5 or 6 hours, he was completely free of any machines except the food tube that was feeding him. And the doctors were baffled. What's happened? How did this happen? Because not only had he woke up and he was aware and bright, but he'd had this regeneration of his entire insides, which they had said were, you know, so badly damaged, would never work again. So basically, we had this incredible double miracle. And I thought, wow, you know, I've been so lucky. And of course, once again, I had no faith that God had done any of this for me, or that God had intervened on my behalf, because I thought, oh, this was human energy. This was energy, you know. Little did I know that a rose is a rose by any other name. It didn't matter what name I was giving it. It was divinely orchestrated from God. Of course, I wasn't going to know that for another year, because I was so resistant and so obstinate that I didn't want to be involved in something that was, in, you know, I thought was kind of odd and weird, and, you know. So I was determined to get on with my life and just live it and say, oh, lucky me, you know, everything's great. Well, over the course of the next year, these voices continued to come, and information continued to come, and information about the biomagnetic energy of the world, and how there was this incredible grid that lived around us, and how humanity and all other living matter was connected to this grid. And then I had kind of an infusion or knowledge of quantum physics and the understanding of manifesting and creation, and how because we were an exact piece of God, you had co-creative ability. And then it started to tell me that what you did for a dying boy with a small group of people, you can do for a dying planet with a large group. Of course, once again, I'm like, well, I don't want any part of this. This is, you know, this is too crazy for me. And now, I did go far enough to write it all down. But I was very
just
resistant.
In case.
Just in case. I was very resistant that I don't want to do this. But more and more, I was being visited by these magnificent beings that were obviously from God. So now they had to convince me that, you know, This is God's doing, and you're going to have to awaken to the fact that this is a commitment you need to make. Once again, being very resistant. So I was directed to go to Montreal, where I met some incredible people in Montreal that said to me, this is real. You know, I think you need to follow the instructions. And I remember saying, well, if I follow the instructions, will they leave me alone? Will they go away? Because
no.
I was.
They never leave you alone.
So I thought, well, you know, if I follow the instructions, will they leave me alone?
Now, not even after you die. They're not leaving you alone.
No. Ironically, the July before all this happened, I had had a series of visions and instructions about committing myself to God. And I had to go to the beach, and I had to follow these wonderful instructions that were very uplifting. But I kept thinking, well, okay, if I do this, they'll leave me alone. It was always this kind of, well, if I do this, they'll leave me alone. So I got involved with these wonderful people, and this gentleman who had did the music for my site, and he's done it all for free, which is wonderful, but he sent me some music, and he said this should help you, you know, soothe some of the anxiety, you know, because I find it very soothing. And embedded in his music, tones within tones, and then these beings explained to me that the universal language of the universe is tonal. And not only is it tonal, it's mathematics.
Yeah.
So I started seeing these incredible mathematics-based figures and grid systems and incredible things that I really didn't know very much about. So I started seeking out people that could, you know, help me with any of this.
I've had that same experience.
It was incredible for me because mm-hmm. now more and more I had to accept the fact that, okay, there's a God. Okay, you know. So anyway, I started, I've lost my place. I started writing down everything I heard from these tones. So embedded in his music, I was getting instructions of a website, how to build it, what colors were on it. There was this incredible symbol that they said was a symbol that the soul would remember, and that to place it on the blue-black background, because when it opened, people would immediately feel a draw. There's something about this I remember or I feel or I connect to. And
this is at www.firethegrid.com. I just wanted to hand that out to people so that they can go and look at it.
And watch the site crash. But it's a fabulous site. It's fabulously simple, but it was all divinely channeled. None of it is my ideas. The colors, the wording is mine. I wrote it, but even that was divinely guided as I wrote it.
What was your attitude so rigid against God before this happened, this accident happened? What was going on in your life?
Well, I had had a lot of sexual abuse since childhood, and I had grown up promiscuous and you know, hardened, for lack of a better word. Mm-hmm. And my father was devoutly Christian-based, and, of course, there was always these wrath of God kind of implications, you know, that if you do these things, you're going to go to hell.
Was he the perpetrator?
No, not my father.
Okay.
No. But in my opinion, as a child growing up with this kind of feeling, you know, I was shunned. You know, God wasn't going to accept me. God, I was going to be punished. I didn't feel God was there for me. I didn't feel protected. And therefore, I had decided that I had the power of one, and you're looking at her.
Mm-hmm.
So I became what, you know, the classical psychological books say, a survivor.
Mm-hmm.
And I survived my life, and I was suicidal all of my life. It was something that never really left me until the past couple of years.
Was it after this accident that the suicidal feelings started to leave you?
Well, not for about a year and a half.
What was going on in that process that they finally left?
The first part of it was I couldn't believe that, you know, God could give me my peace. I was finally dead. I could finally go home, wherever home was. and I finally had peace. So what a cruel joke to send me back.
Mm-hmm.
Why would you do that? You know?
This is after you died, after your experience.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And I really struggled with why would they send me back. And then when I started to hear these voices and I was communicating with these fabulous light beings, the experiences were so incredible. Then all I could deal with was, why me? Why would God pick someone like me to communicate with?
What was your answer to that?
They said, if we can get you, we can get anyone.
Mm-hmm. You're so resistant. Then we can talk to anyone.
And they have a wonderful sense of humor.
They do.
Yeah.
They're really funny. And mine tend to be really paradoxical. They're always giving me the opposite or giving my clients the opposite of what's going to happen. It's so funny.
Well, I think they had to train me to listen. I don't know if that makes sense, because they would use several different ways. I could hear things sometimes. Sometimes I have what I call infusions of massive amounts of energy, like I said about the grid systems and about the biomagnetic energy fields of the Earth and how things operated. And then I would have also little visions, and it was really something, because when I would get something right, I would, you know, I'd be going through kind of a guessing thing of, you know, it's a dog, it's a horse, it's, you know, that kind of feeling. And when I would get it right, I would hear ding, 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 ding. And I would say, oh, my gosh, it's like Bob Barker Show. Oh, okay, I got it. And then I'd get all excited. Okay, I got it. Give me the next piece.
Okay, so you're learning the language. Did you ever find out who you were talking to?
The only voice that literally speaks in my ear is my other piece. My feeling is some sort of my soulmate or my twin soul or some sort of connection to me. In
your
my
soul guide, maybe?
Yep, and his name is Aramis.
Ah, Aramis.
And he says that, you know, you have to have faith and follow the instructions. You know, we have proven ourselves, you followed the instructions with Evan. What you did for a dying boy with a small group of people, you can do for a dying planet with a large group. Follow the instructions implicitly and have faith, child. They always called me child. So, you know, I even struggled with this well into this year. And come February, I said, I can't do this. I'm overwhelmed. I'm afraid. I'm scared. I'm totally out of my element. And I'm going to withdraw from doing this. You know, I'm going to hope somebody else picks it up or, you know. And but I couldn't live with that. I couldn't find peace. I knew I had to finish this project. I knew it was incredibly important. So when I picked it back up again and I said, okay, God, tell me what this human needs to do to make the committed choice to serve you. How do I do it? How do I become a fervent servant to you right now? And once again, I was given a series of instructions. And
so let's go back to the instructions. I want to ask you about two sets. What are the instructions, of course, for the world? How do we save this dying planet? But what were your specific instructions?
Well, I was given three very distinct instructions that would commit this human to the project, to make it very tangible and real to the human. Because I said, you know, she's very resistant.
Mm-hmm.
And I say it in the she.
They might know that by now.
I think, yeah.
Maybe.
So it's funny you asked that question tonight, because this morning at 10 o'clock, I committed the first of the three instructions, which was to put a tattoo on my arm indicating a return to wholeness and marking me as the unity of the first tribe of humanity, and that when humanity decided to come back and embrace the ancient ways and unite as one tribe, because we have to unite to get this earth back on course.
Absolutely.
This grid system is decaying,
mm-hmm.
and as it decays, it's causing this extreme weather the water problems. And the water problems are going to increase.
Yep.
And that because our auric fields are directly linked through this grid system, we can propel it. And what they showed me was the paddles to the chest. Boom. You know when they get a shock to make
yep.
your heart start?
Mm-hmm.
They said, you have this power. And they said, one true believer holds the faith of 1,000. And that if there's 1,000 around the one true believer who are fence-sitters being, hey, I'd like things to be different, but what can I do? I'm just, you know, a little me. Then that would amplify all those around. But it didn't have to be in the physical sense of on the earth around, because this grid system unites through a series of these hexagonal tubings or interconnections. So the power of one radiates out and amplifies those of the others.
I'll tell you, I want to ask you what your tattoo looks like.
Oh, it is, it's an Ouroboros,
mm-hmm.
which is a snake eating its own tail,
mm-hmm.
and it's in the shape of an Alpha and Omega. And they said that the Alpha and Omega was a very new kind of Christian-based symbol,
mm-hmm.
which was wonderful. But the Ouroboros was from the ancient times, and the secrets within the ancients was going to help us evolve.
Well, I wanted to ask you that, but it's tying in with my second statement about when I had this experience of the tonal unification of how the universe works as one. I had this, it was working with a crystal, and I had this column going up in the center of a circle. Which I'm relating to what you're talking about. And also it sounds like the snake eating its own tail. Because as the column moves up, the expansion of the universe is created and it actually makes music.
And the music's incredible.
Mm-hmm.
The music of the universe is incredible. This snake was the very first image I saw. And it was what drove me to learn to meditate. And once I learned to meditate, things really amplified. Pardon me. Because then I really started to connect. Now, they taught me to meditate. When I would get in the bathtub, I would feel what I would call an alignment.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'd get this little spinning motion happening. And I was like, okay, you know, just go with it. You're safe. You're fine. And the next thing I would find myself lifting out of this time and space and being open to the rest, to the oneness of the galaxy that we're not a part of, but we are really a part of, and that everything I see and hear and experience is available to every human,
mm-hmm.
except there's like a veil that keeps us from it.
Mm-hmm. So what are your second instructions?
I had to change my name
mm-hmm.
to Samoya. So I'm in the process of that.
And what does that mean?
They told me that Samoya was a warrior and defender of the cause.
Okay.
And that I had been sent for this purpose and that the awakening was necessary and that now that I'm awake and following the instructions, they can speed things up.
Finally, huh?
Finally.
It took a little bit with you.
It took a lot with me. And I have an amazing support team that have been clinging their hands and kind of like, please, listen.
Boy, oh boy.
Yeah, I'm a most resistant teller of the tale.
Yeah, very interesting. And what is your third set?
And the third one was that this human needs a tangible token to remind her daily of what she's doing. So to wear this little small crystal in the shape of a raindrop. And they had showed me this the same time they showed me the snake.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, wear it so that it hangs within the heart chakra.
Yep.
And at the time, I was like, what's a heart chakra?
Yeah, that's probably why I was associating the snake with the crystal.
And it was this magnificent little crystal. So I went looking for it.
Mm-hmm.
I bought it, and I never wore it. I never did any of the things I was told to do. Except in the past couple of months, I've decided, okay, I remember sitting in the tub one night, and Aramis came and said, okay, it's time. You have to make a decision. And I said, well, I need to have a ceremony, and I need to have and he goes, you know what? You don't. You and me right here, right now. You know, the divine is opened. You are connected. Make a choice. You know, are you going to be committed to work with the energy of the world and follow the instructions, or are you going to choose not to? And I remember crying and crying and said, okay, I commit. But I had to negotiate a deal with God. I had to know that I had some degree of power within my own life. I don't know if that makes sense. And I think every human from here on in will negotiate what they're comfortable with, what language they want to use. You don't have to use the dogma-based language we have used for centuries. You choose the language you're comfortable with. You have the communion with God that you're comfortable with. That will automatically put you in a place of joy because you're choosing it.
Mm-hmm.
So once I did this, it was wonderful because that night, just as I'm saying, okay, God, I commit, and I'm doing my personal oath that I made, this incredible lightning and thunderstorm started. And it started to rain, and the lightning was incredible. And I said, well, you have a good sense of humor. Is this confirmation? You know?
Oh, that's interesting. It's starting to rain and thunder and lightning here in Phoenix, which doesn't often happen that often.
Well, this is the third time it's happened. And I always chuckle because I always think, is that for me? But this grid is essential, and I didn't understand it until the past 3 or 4 weeks because I've got a whole new set of information about the grid. And it talks about the fact that even people who are not connected spiritually
mm-hmm.
have an understanding of the biomagnetic energy of the Earth.
Okay, let's talk about the grid and then talk about the instructions so that we can give a plan, a blueprint out there for people or a prescription for people to follow to fire up the grid. Okay, what were the instructions you were given about the grid?
Well, they told me that it seems like the solar plexus, sometimes it's far hard for me to see, but coming out of the front of our bodies is like a thread,
mm-hmm.
And it connects us to this grid system, and that the energy you give out, you get back.
Yep.
And that the energy that has been going out constantly to the grid is not a revitalizing or rejuvenating energy. On most parts, most of it's turned off because people are just completely not in tune at all.
Mm-hmm.
Or they're sending out anger and hostility or resentment or, you know, this sucks or things are terrible. And what we need to do is raise the energy frequency to a point that it causes a photonic blast within this grid system. And this was what I saw with the kind of the paddles to the chest. It's a jump start.
How do people raise their vibration?
Well, a lot of people ask me that after I got the information. And daily, okay, I'll give you an example. Somebody's sitting in their easy chair with their can of beer watching the football game. They're not spiritual. They're not connected. And they wish the world was different, but it's not. If they're sitting there and they're saying, wow, this is living, this is really living, and they realize, hey, I'm really happy right now. This is a blessing and a joy to be sitting here. I'm blessed. This is a great experience for me. It doesn't matter if it's a great experience for somebody else, for you. When you say thank you, when you say, wow, I'm blessed to have this wonderful moment, this is great, you raise your own personal frequency. And when you find little moments throughout the day, when you're washing your hands and the smell of fragrant soap hits you and the warmth hits your flesh and you for that brief moment realize that being alive in flesh is the most magnificent experience that we could be offered. And you say, wow, this is great. Thank you. Thank you. This is so great. You raise it again. And with each one of these little thoughts that we create within us, we raise our own frequency. And during that time, we heighten our own frequency and therefore connect to the grid more openly. But that's that was that. That's kind of an intermittent set of instructions to find joy in the moments of your life. The big one was on July 17th, 2007, there is a galactic opening, and that this grid is ripe to be charged, and that if enough humans choose consciously to redirect the Earth towards love and peace and harmony, we have the opportunity to vote, to choose, to consciously evolve. And by sitting in meditation, and meditation doesn't mean you have to sit and in an lotus position chant. And you don't have to sit and pray. Now, if that is your tool, remember I said earlier about your language, if that is the tool that you're most comfortable with, do that and enjoy it and be thankful for it. And find that special place that brings you love and joy and peace, wherever it might be. But if you don't have a connection to God, but you would like to have one, then find something that brings you love and joy and peace. Spend the hour with your family, looking at them and being appreciative of how much joy they bring you. Look at the face of your child and see the joy in the face of your child. You know, sit with music that stimulates you to a place of joy. And if that's, you know, rock and roll, well, then sit with your rock and roll and be thankful and blessed of how great it is to have that experience.
So, and what date was this again?
July 17th, 2007.
Now, what's significant about this date, do you think?
What do I think is significant?
No, yeah, what makes 7-17-07, there's a lot of sevens in there, significant?
I don't know, but a group of people in the United States took that date and the time. The time is 11-11 Greenwich Mean Time, which means we were all sit at different times around the world, but the one constant will be 11. So I'm 7-11, and you'll probably be, I don't know, in the morning, probably 1-11, or I can't think right now of time zones, but that's basically how it works. As we go around the Earth, it'll be a different time in every zone, but we'll actually be together at the same time. So a group of astrologers took the dates that I gave and the time, and they were quite surprised, and they emailed me, and I got a lot of emails saying, are you aware of the importance of this day? And I said, no, I'm not. You know, I just told you the date that I heard. Mm-hmm. And they said, well, there's a galactic center opened for a spiritual happening on that day. That's an incredibly powerful day, and when they did the lineup of astrology, they said that it was perfectly ripe for an incredible happening.
It also comes to number four, which is wholeness.
Which is wholeness. Mm-hmm. Well, see, I don't know a lot about numerology or even astrology. When I talk to people, I tell them what I've experienced and what I've seen, and it's funny because people say, oh, that's this, or, you know, I talked about something one day and somebody said, oh, that's the Merkaba, and I said, wow, great, now I can call it something because it's so incredible. And it's nice to know that there's words that go with these happenings.
The Merkaba. I wonder what that's about. Anyway, so everyone needs, at this point in time, which is 7-17-07 at 11-11 Greenwich time, to sit in a meditative state and send gratitude.
And love.
Okay.
Love is the key to our success. It truly is. And when we send out that love, it will bounce back. And this grid system will be ignited. Now, these beings have told me that there will not be a complete stop of all things that will happen in the history of humanity, like any disasters, but there will be a lessening. But there will still be things that will happen, but we will be more prepared for it. And that the people who sit to fire the grid are going to have an acceleration of being. And what I said, well, what does that mean? And they said, well, people who learn to meditate and study and spend a life looking to find enlightenment and have raised frequency and be at a higher place, there will be an accelerated offering at that time for everybody who wants to participate. So it's kind of like a jump start to a higher understanding. to a more peaceful place, to an awakening within us, an awakening of the truth. And that's available to those that sit on that day. That doesn't mean that that awakening is not available to all humans on the earth. It is. You are a piece of God. You're open to all the divine knowledge that the universe has to offer. But that this time, remember I said how we send it out and it comes back?
Mm-hmm.
Well, when it comes back to us, it's coming back charged. And as it comes back to us charged, we will get a piece of the love of everybody who has sent it out. And we'll get an amplified return. Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
Yeah. And therefore, each soul, because that's the true essence of your being, will have a moment, an aha moment. Now, we're not going to wake up the next morning and our world is fixed. But we are going to wake up the next morning and realize that millions of people have participated in a project and that there's enough of us that desire change that we have consciously just voted on the direction that we choose to take in the next years to come. And
so
with
how
that
many people at this point know of this project?
Well, right now we have 200 nations signed on as team leaders. So when I started putting the instructions on the grid site, I put up additional instructions as they came, and one of them was to invite people of the world to become team leaders. And we've had a constant communication with these team leaders. There's Japan, Norway, Australia, New Zealand. It's incredible because there's 200 nations with team leaders. Because in the instructions, I was told to gather a mass of humanity as the world has never seen and ensure that there are humans in every corner of the world. So my understanding, when they showed me this visually, I saw each human as a pinprick of light, and as the grid lit up, it went ping, 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 and then the whole grid system kind of combined because people in Australia met up with people in Canada, met up with people in Japan, and as these little thin lines of this fabulous golden light connected from each person, this grid system lit up, and it was charged. So ensure that there were people in all corners of the world. And as it stands today, we have 200 nations confirmed building teams of people in their country to make sure that we have people everywhere.
So you have already seen this happen in your vision.
Yes.
Did I hear that right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Awesome.
And in my heart, I know this is going to happen. I've had a series of fabulous emails in the past several days of people saying, how can we help? We want this to become global. How can we televise it? Can we get involved with media? And I said, look, I want everybody's help. I want to invite the entire world, no matter of what our status is in the human form, we are all children of God, and we're entitled to make this vote, that we desire an evolution of change, and that we're not satisfied with the destructive path we're headed on. We want and we desire and we deserve to find the peace and love and joy that this earth has to offer.
I think that's a wonderful way to put it, is the inner vote with your inner connection for peace, love, and joy. I just love that.
And it is, and it's a matter of choice. You can have any experience in the world, and you can choose to take from it the positive, or you can choose to take from it the negative. Whatever experience that might be, you can look at it and say, oh, yeah, that sucks, typical, you know. Or you can say, wow, that was a challenging event. What did I learn? How do I feel about that? What was the best thing that came out of that? Oh, well, I feel this. And all of a sudden you have had a personal evolution where you've decided, I didn't like that, or I'm going to change that, or I'm going to have a growth moment from it. All of a sudden, that negative moment becomes one of joy and growth. You've had a positive moment from something negative. And it's all about choice, and how we make those choices define who we are. And when we define ourselves as humans and understand that our sole purpose on this earth is to have experiences and not judge ourselves so harshly. God doesn't judge our experiences, we do. And when we judge our experiences and lay guilt and shame upon ourselves, it lowers our internal light, our own frequency, because God doesn't judge us. That's a human condition.
So both the sense of having appreciation for ourselves and the source and our connection within,
yes.
God, the source, or however that you feel comfortable labeling it.
Exactly.
Is
find
the call and
find your personal language. Mm-hmm. Find the language that works for you. And even if you have a glimmer, even if you have a fissure of possibility within you, that will spread within your own auric field. Because as you start to practice little moments, you'll find yourself doing them. Instead of shouting at the guy that cut you off, you'll have a moment of saying, I hope that man has a better day. He's obviously, you know, in a rush, and I hope he's safe. You've lifted yourself above into a new place.
Now, how has this changed your son's life? Does he remember any of what happened to him?
My son had incredible visions and experiences, which he talked about quite avidly for about 6 to 8 months. And then everything stopped. He never said anything else. And he stopped, and when I would mention things to him, he'd look at me and he'd say, Mommy, I don't know what you're talking about. And I wonder what that's all about. But he did tell me that he had a very special job on this earth.
Very interesting. What's his job?
Well, I think those are his private things, and I won't discuss them except to say that they were pretty incredible, and that for a five-year-old, he was incredibly insightful. And it was all about healing the earth and making sure that everybody had comfort and food, and he said making sure that people love each other. And he seemed to know something. Now, back then, of course, I wasn't really in tune with this, and I was listening to him thinking, wow, this is pretty incredible. But now, looking back, he was far more in tune than I was. And there is something I can share. Because I had no God, because we were a family with no religion, I refused to talk about it in my house. He never heard the word God or angels or anything like that around here. And when he came home from the hospital and told me that he had seen God, I got goosebumps. Because, you know, in my opinion, if he hadn't seen God, why would he know to talk about that?
Mm-hmm.
Because nobody had given him that information.
Can you share what he had seen?
He explained seeing, he talked about seeing love. And he talked about how wonderful it felt, and he talked about magnificent colors. And I guess aside from that, I really don't feel I can tell his story, and maybe as he gets older, he will. I'm not sure. But he helped me find my way, as did my daughter. My daughter was 12. Well, she's 12 now, but at that time she was 9. And she was incredibly insightful. And she shared so many things with me that really started to help me see what these children saw instinctively that I was missing, because I was so caught up in the details. And the details is what has separated us as a planet and a nation and a humanity, a tribe of humanity. The details of how we have chosen to find God in our lives has separated us. And that's the tragic flaw. Because a rose is a rose by any other name. So if you're somebody who wants to worship the divine and call it energy, like I had originally, you know, found my path that way, that's fine. Find love and joy in it. Find the happiness in it. Use whatever words that bring you to that place of connection. Don't judge your language, and don't judge each other's language. Whatever dogma-based religion you've chosen, that is your human's way of finding ritual that connects you to God.
What is your relationship like with your father now?
Well, it was funny because my dad came down to visit just before I launched the website. And I needed my father's blessing because he had had such a... His father was a minister, and he had a very deep spiritual connection, and I needed his blessing. I needed to know that he was all right with my language of God. Now, I use God all the time, and I often call God he, and I apologize to people because God has no gender. There is no gender at all. And from what I've seen, and I use the word God because it's what I grew up with, but the word that best describes how I feel is light of grace.
And that's a wonderful expression.
It is, and it's the word they gave me because I struggled so much with what am I going to use? How am I going to feel connected? Because God always had the connotation of guilt for me, you know, shame. And light of grace was the word that they came up with. Now, I've just recently got it last week, so it's not in my language yet. And you see how language works? You know, we're not separate. We have 56 different religions around the world. You're all loving the same force. Love it together. Who cares what words and rituals we place on it? As long as it's in a place of loving, harmony, joy, giving, sharing, you're doing the same job. Once you realize you're doing the same job, we don't need to define it. Because in defining, to choose to make the world different, that's all we need to know.
So was your dad able to hear that?
He was, and he gave me his blessing, and he totally understood, and he was thrilled.
What a healing, and generationally so.
Exactly, because I need to be allowed to worship and communicate and meditate, things that my father knew nothing about, but had often thought that, oh, well, they belong to hippie bunches. That's not real God stuff. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't matter, because what is prayer if not to go into a state of meditation to find your connection with God? Whatever tool works for you.
How can people prepare for the 7/17/07/11/11 event? Greenwich time, by the way, folks.
What I was told as the primary kind of first steps, because a lot of people, they divided humanity into three groups, and I say they being these guides. They said humanity fell into three groups. There was fence sitters, the dogma-based religious people who already have ritual. Excuse me. Sorry, that's my daughter.
That's okay, I understand. I have one too.
And the third group were kind of the New Age metaphysical movement. And they said you will need to speak to each person in their own language. You're going to talk about the same thing, but it will be in the language of those listening. So you couldn't go to fence sitters and speak about dogma-based religion because they had already decided, well, that doesn't work for me. And you probably couldn't speak to them about the New Age metaphysical movement even. But you could speak about love. Everybody understands loving something, loving your child, loving your pet, loving the sunshine in your face. How many people do you say, oh, I love to lay in the sun. It's so glorious. All you have to add to that statement is, and I'm so blessed to be able to lay here and do it.
So, Judy, do you think they gave you this path to get you out of depression?
That would be wonderful if I thought it was all about me, I guess. Because it's worked. You know, it's I suppose it's, you know, the Galaxy Prozac. The universal pill. But you know what, that's what joy is.
Mm-hmm.
And it's infectious. And as you evolve, you radiate it. And now when people meet me, they say, what are you doing?
Are you in love?
Yeah, you're so different. And I say, it's this every moment, finding a joyful moment. When I eat a salad, when I have a bowl of soup, I'm like, this is so wonderful. I'm so lucky to have this. Thank you. This is so great. People think I'm telling them their soup is great, and I'm so, thank you for giving it to me. But to me, I'm saying thank you to God, and thank you for the experience of the sense of taste. Nowhere else in the entire universal galaxy are we entitled to such incredible experiences as our five senses offer us here. In the material plane, we are entitled to the most magnificent sensations that only exist here. And if I said to you, you only have 5 more years to experience them, would you not start to relish every one? And that's what it comes down to, is we don't know how long we have here. But we do know that we can be thankful for every wonderful experience that comes our way. And if that gives us the possibility of elongating our stay on this planet, well, then that's fabulous, because, you know, you're killing 2 birds with 1 stone. You're fully enjoying your moment and perpetuating the joy to be continuous.
Well, I personally, my experiences have led me to the belief that there's absolutely no reason why we can't be immortal. The Creator's immortal. We can be immortal, too.
Well, I have a really lovely little story, if we have enough time.
We got about 3 more minutes.
Okay, well, I saw this magnificent iridescent pink cloud, and the voice said, "This is God. See this cloud? Envision this as God." Now, is that God? No. I think they're symbolically showing me something. And in the field of vision came a hand, and it grabbed a little piece of this pink cloud, and it said, "I want you to see how much a piece of God you are." And it pulled this little piece of cloud through the stars, through the galaxies, through the universe, into our stratosphere, into our atmosphere, through to our Earth, and they placed this little piece of pink cloud in the head of a human. But the little strand continued to be connected to the big pink cloud, which was many, many, many miles away.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, "Do you see now how much a piece of God you are?" And the hand repeated this like several times over the course of the image.
Mm-hmm.
And it said, "Each and every one of you are a piece of God. You are co-creators. You can manifest the joy and love that you desire. You simply have to choose it."
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, okay, I see what you mean by that we are a piece of God. And if you're that much a piece of something, then that something loves you as a piece of itself.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, you should love yourself for that piece of itself. Don't just sit and love God. You have to love yourself and each other, because each one of you, when you look past the human's exterior, you're each a piece of the wonderful pink cloud. And when you see each other, you recognize that. So to know yourself is to know someone else. Or to know who you are is to know someone else.
Yes. How wonderful. Yeah. Thank you. And your website is www.firethegrid.com. This has been Shelley Yates. How else can people get a hold of you?
Email? I suppose you could email me at Samoya, Samoya, at hotmail.com.
All right, let's get those team leaders moving out there.
Yes, we want team leaders. We're looking for the Antarctica and Africa, and we have places that now we're going to start doing some serious intention to find the people we're missing.
All right, very good. Thank you so much for being on the show, Shelley. I really appreciate you and your experiences and just the work that you're doing, the so important work. And I'm so glad you decided to make the connection. That's got to be so much easier on you now.
It has gotten much easier since, yes.
Yeah,
and I'm thrilled that you invited me.
Going into another body of water, which I don't think you want to do.
No, but no. I tell you, now that I'm living in this state of grace, it's available to all of us, and it's fabulous.
It
is really
wonderful.
Is. But you define it yourself.
Yeah. Okay. Next week is Cynthia Dresler, and she's up talking about how organic food is a lifestyle. And stay tuned for the Dawn and Wynn Show next. Thank you so much, Dawn and Doug. I just so appreciate you and your work and just this wonderful opportunity to talk to people such as Shelley. So thank you. And you all out there have a fabulous night in gratitude and love. Thank you so much. Bye-bye now.